Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have our terrific panel before us this morning, and it's a delight to welcome you to the program, and it's a delight to welcome them to the program. Let me introduce them to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, has just taken his seat at the head of the table. Good morning, Alan.
How do you do?
I do fine. WAMC's Ray Graff is with us. He is waving quite enthusiastically, I would add.
Oh, I would think so.
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Romeo, not here. I said that she would be here, not here today. Hopefully, we'll be here tomorrow. Apparently, stuck in an airport.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that's what it was. So Ray is filling in for Rosemary, we think. And, of course, our wonderful political consultant who's here each and every Monday, Libby Post. And it's a great thrill to have Libby with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
What is that jacket you're wearing this morning?
This is my Patriots jacket.
Oh, your Patriots jacket.
What did you think? It was like a. Do you think it was like a?
I thought it was patriotical.
Yeah, he joined the militia.
Yeah,
something like that.
You've asked me that before.
Have you?
Yes, you asked if it had a "Don't tread on me."
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, Patriots are football. You know that, Alan, right?
Yes. Football.
Okay.
Football.
Right.
That's the egg-like.
Right. Right. And you know, the Red Sox are baseball, and they won last night. Got that too?
Oh, I do know that.
I know. It's a great game.
We're going to talk about a lot of that great stuff, about controversial calls over the weekend, and we'll talk about Lou Reed, who we just heard from a little bit, coming in, and many other things. Let us begin with a topic that I know nothing about, but I'm hoping someone can tell me more about it, and that is inflation. The front page of the New York Times: inflation is widely reviled as a kind of tax on modern life, but as Federal Reserve policymakers prepare to meet this week, there is a growing concern inside and outside the Fed that inflation is not rising fast enough. Some economists say more inflation is just what the American economy needs to escape from a half decade of sluggish growth and high unemployment. That doesn't sound like we want that, and yet we don't want the...
We've been saying all along that what we have to do is not to have inflation. And we have been watching the inflationary numbers very, very carefully. And so as the Fed's Fed props up the economy by basically printing more money, we have worried that that was going to lead to inflation. Well, it hasn't theoretically, although I don't know that we don't have inflation because certain things just keep going up. So even if you have a couple of percent a year and you're retired, that could really hurt you if you're living on a fixed income and the rest. So therefore, you know, this is a double-edged sword, and it was almost as if the Times was editorializing when they wrote this piece on the front page, saying a lot of people think we really need to do this now.
Well, I think they were saying that their chief source in this is Janet Yellen, and she is leading the charge here. President Obama's nominee to lead the Fed, and has long argued that a little inflation is particularly valuable when the economy is weak. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's how it obviously is. It comes up as an issue, but when you think about it, if our mindset is always that inflation bad,
mm-hmm. then bad things about inflation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it also says here, because I am reading this even though it's above my pay grade, rising prices help companies increase profits. That's good for the stock market and the people who own the companies. Rising wages help borrowers repay debts. That's making a big assumption that just because the companies are going to make more money, they're going to increase wages. And we have seen in the last few years, while the economy has gotten better and some companies are making a lot more money, you still need to apply for food stamps if you work at McDonald's. So, you know, there's no guarantee that one is going to lead to the other.
Right, this has been the argument. This is the argument of trickle down for a long time.
Well, I was a little shaver in the 70s, but mm-hmm. I recall hearing all the time, in the Carter years and other times, stagflation. So you had rising prices and not really any
anything
growth
to show.
And you know, things were not all that wonderful, as I recall.
Well, I remember when there was the big inflation under Nixon, and Nixon said, don't give people a raise more than 2.5% or something like that. And it was devastating for people. It was devastating for my parents when that happened, because my mother was expecting a raise, and she didn't get it.
All this talk has prompted dismay among economists who see little benefit in inflation and who warn that the Fed could lose control of prices as the economy recovers. As inflation accelerates, economists agree that any benefits can be quickly outstripped by the disruptive consequences of people rushing to save money as soon as possible. Rising inflation also punishes people living on fixed incomes, and it discourages lending and long-term investments, imposing an enduring restraint on economic growth. Even if the inflation subsides, the spectacle of American central bankers trying to press the inflation rate higher in the aftermath of the 2008 crisis is virtually without precedent, according to Alan Greenspan, the former Fed chairman.
Hmm.
And if you can't believe him, you believe?
Right? Well, there's some people who don't believe him anymore.
Yeah.
And very often, he's always had trouble with declarative sentences, beginning, middle, and end. So when he says something that you can understand, yeah, it's deeply suspicious.
Well, it says here the school board in Anchorage is counting on inflation to keep a lid on teachers' wages. That just about says it all.
As a 72-year-old, all I can say is I remember the Pepsi jingle, which said all that and a nickel, too.
Mm-hmm.
How much does a Coke cost now? I
mean, oh, well, God. You know. Well, it's $2.75 to get on the subway. And
yeah,
that
exactly.
Used to be a nickel, too.
Inflation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, Joe, carry right on.
Next.
All right, next.
next.
wow, need to get along on that one.
Yeah, let's get on something more uplifting, shall we?
Yeah. okay. All right.
Where's all the economists when we need them?
Let's get you all excited. Practicing here. Booty. Let's talk about the Washington Post had an interesting article I was reading yesterday in the Sunday paper about Hillary Clinton. Here's mm-hmm. the thing. Every conversation we have with any Democratic operative about the 2016 presidential race starts this way. Well, I mean, if Hillary runs, which of course is to be expected, if Hillary Rodham Clinton, the former Secretary of State, former New York Senator, and 2008 presidential candidate runs, then the Democratic race and the general election too revolve solely around her. But of late, those conversations have an interesting addendum that go like this. Of course, if Hillary doesn't run, well, then what?
Yeah.
And then, and that's where I thought we would start this conversation. And top of this list, interestingly enough, is Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
If Elizabeth Warren wanted to do it, she'd have a case to make. Yes, she would. We've long believed, this is according to the, again, this is in the
she
Washington
come
Post.
Out of nowhere. Yeah.
We've long believed that the freshman senator's hero status among liberals nationally and massive fundraising capacity would have her very formidable if she ran. Warren has been adamant about her lack of interest in the race, but things change in politics. Senator Barack Obama of Illinois was similarly adamant about his lack of interest running for president in 2008, and, well, he got over that.
Sure.
So, so what, and I thought what was interesting of this point is, because maybe about a year ago, that was, all right, it's Hillary and Joe Biden. And those were the two big names.
That's right.
And it seems as though Biden has fallen off a little bit.
No,
as
I think
as
Biden, I think if Hillary doesn't run, Biden's going to do it.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. You know, every pundit.
You don't believe the hints that he has said that he is sort of eyeing a retirement and going out
well,
on top?
I think he says that because he can't have what he wants. He wants to be president. He can't be president if Hillary wants to run. But I think if Hillary doesn't run, I think his chances are just increased. People like Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats like Biden. I think he would do well. And he's a centrist. Elizabeth Warren, who I love, by the way.
She'd have to move too far.
She's my senator. And, you know, I just think she's extraordinary. She's a sort of, well, the best thing I could say without getting too killed is, you know, she's sort of the conscience of the Democratic Party, and she's of the Paul Wellstone variety, somebody who really is to the sort of left side of the party. But she's honest. She's an honest broker. She goes for it. She says what Democrats want to hear. Adlai Stevenson did the same thing, but of course, anybody would have lost Eisenhower. I think Biden is a very viable candidate. But the one who, of course, is sitting up here on the second floor of the Capitol is Andrew Cuomo. Now there is no question, no matter what he says, I'm telling you now that he's going to run if he has the Cuomo name. And he has as good a shot as anyone. So I am sure that he will run if Hillary doesn't run.
So I'm just going to read you the paragraph that was written in the Washington Post, and I just want you to comment and parse it, if you will. Okay?
I love the word parse.
Okay. Andrew Cuomo, unlike some of the other people on this list, Martin O'Malley, we're looking at you. The New York governor is doing the do as little as possible to stoke 2016 speculation thing that may or may not be a thing. Cuomo, of a famous political family, knows that in a field without Clinton, he is a heavyweight given his name, fundraising abilities, and resume as governor is one of the most Democratic states in the country.
Well, first of all, you know, I disagree with the assessment that he's doing nothing. Everything he does in New York State has something to do with his presidential ambitions. So if you, and I know he gets furious when I say this, but if you see him on gun control, if you see him on an economic program for upstate New York, every bit of it, and if you see him as a keep the taxes down guy, every bit of it can be tied to presidential ambition. So where is this the Times you're reading out of?
This is the Washington Post.
Washington Post comes out of, I just have no idea. I know that Andrew Cuomo wants to run for president.
So the question, the other thing that I have that I just, I don't mean to belittle it. I certainly understand it. But when they talk about this famous political family, it's a famous political family in New York. I don't know. I think the question all along has been how far that.
I agree with you.
That reaches.
Well, I hear from a lot of people who say to me, how's that guy Cuomo doing in New York? You know, in other words, they don't really know a lot about him. I was just down in New Orleans, and a lot of people were saying to me, well, what's politics like there? What's this guy Cuomo like? We don't, on the other hand, know a lot about Martin O'Malley from Baltimore, from Maryland. So I think Cuomo gets a shot. If he decides he's going to run, he knows what he's doing. He's a great campaigner. He knows how to get money from everybody. I think he gets a chance.
Okay, I want to bring up three other names.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll
bring up three the other names.
Thank you, Brad. Yeah. I appreciate that. that would be the agenda
man here. Yes.
Thank you very much. Now here's Ray with some words about Alpo. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts. Doctors Katz and Purdy providing daily and on-call urgent veterinary care 24 hours every day. HampVet.com. The Research Foundation for SUNY, collaborating across the state to expand New York's innovation ecosystem. RFSUNY.org. And The Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants, Hudson River views, and getaway and golf packages. TheGarrison.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We are having a bit of a chat about a editorial that was written in the Washington Post. If Hillary Rodham Clinton passes in 2016, which Democrats run? And they have assembled a list. And they have tier one, Hillary Clinton. Tier two, Joe Biden, Andrew Cuomo, Martin O'Malley, and Elizabeth Warren. The one case they make about Elizabeth Warren, and this is one of those names, Ray, so check this off your list.
Okay.
Warren has one thing that even Clinton doesn't, a rabid following within the liberal base of the party. And she has star power and fundraising potential and someone who could, quote, get the job done. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think she would be a favorite of the Democrats who come out, the very few Democrats relative to the voting population who come out and vote in a primary. And I think she could come, I think she could come on very strong. And I think she would be a favorite. Whether, since the middle wins or loses elections, whether that's good for the Democratic Party, I mean, it'll make me feel good, but whether it's good for the Democratic Party is another whole area. No, the best candidate, if Hillary doesn't run, the best candidate for them, for the Democrats, is Joe Biden. And if he could win in the Republican Party, then Chris Christie is the best candidate for them. His problem, as we all know, is that he may not be able to win primaries either. But if they want to win, he's their guy. If the Democrats want to win in that case, I think it's Joe Biden.
Tier three, they have here a name that we all know and someone that they refer to as a sneaky good politician. A sneaky good politician.
This is unbelievable.
And that is Kirsten Gillibrand.
Oh, Kirsten Gillibrand. Well, I actually, I think she's good. I don't think
give
she's,
her another 10 to 12 years. She needs
I don't
more
think
time.
She's heavy enough on this.
Yeah, and I can I just go back to Elizabeth Warren for a minute?
Yes.
She could win in the primaries.
Yep.
But then in the general, she would have to go so far to the right for her. Which
I don't think she would
going
do it.
In the center.
And I don't think she would do it.
I don't think she can do it. And I don't think she can do it because I think there's too much on the record that could be used against her.
Well, I know. We just talked about Kirsten Gillibrand. She was up here in the in this area. She was a terrific congresswoman. People liked her. But she was,
anti-gun control. She's pro-gun control.
Right. And she wasn't particularly good on gay people. And she wasn't particularly good in a lot of other things. And then when Chuck Schumer, was standing next to her and said, she'll evolve. She'll evolve. And evolve she did.
Yeah, well, I have to say that in terms of the gay stuff, she picked the easy thing first, which was don't ask, don't tell, which was great.
Yeah.
And then she has, become a great ally. And I think it was always in her heart, but she was running in a district that wasn't the most progressive.
And what do we call that when you do that? When you just go with whatever is convenient?
Oh, well, convenient.
Yeah. Politics?
Right.
Yeah. Politically savvy?
I had another term.
I know you did, but...
A sellout? No.
No. I mean, look, she's done a good job.
Yeah.
She's worked hard. People like her. She evolved. Yeah. And people evolve when they have to, except for Elizabeth Warren, who I don't believe will
evolve. We don't want her to evolve to the right. I mean, we need somebody like her to keep saying what she's saying with the credentials that she has to be able to say it. And she might very well have more of an influence staying in the Senate.
Yes, and another guy that was being bandied about was Mr. Dean.
Howard Dean.
He was in tier four.
Tier four. And the question they make about Howard Dean, which I think is interesting, is basically they're saying, okay, if the Democrats go with Hillary, that he would be the person to run against her in the primary that would look and have a campaign against Clinton from the ideological left.
The kiss of death.
Right. I mean, the stupidest thing they can do is mount primaries against Hillary.
The kiss of death.
To be quite honest with you, the stupidest thing the Democrats can do is have a major primary field for the 2016.
Well, I don't mean to be irreverent, but they've never shied away from being stupid before.
I know, but that's the thing. If we want to maintain the White House, we have to get in line and be a little more disciplined like the Republicans.
Well, who's the we?
The Democrats.
Oh, I didn't know.
As in the party.
I didn't realize you were a Democrat.
You can't see the look I just gave him. It was one of incredulous.
It was withering, I would say.
Incredulous, withering look. Whatever.
What are you looking at?
I didn't know if you were going to. I thought you were starting to say something.
No. I think that this is a fascinating discussion. Here's what the election's going to be. Ready? You can write it down.
Okay.
It's going to be Hillary Clinton versus Chris Christie.
Oh, wow. That would be interesting.
That's going to be the election. And it's going to be a very close election.
And you think he's going to make it through the Republican because they've been so badly
beat up? I think they are so hungry now.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are so anxious to have the presidency. And if you get the presidency and in a very close United States Senate, you bring the Senate with you. I mean, I think the word goes out. You want to win. This is the way to win. Now, at another time, maybe not. But now, I think they're ready to win and to be a little bit more pragmatic.
And for those of you keeping score at home, it's 2013, and we are talking about 2016.
Correct.
So obviously
right.
A lot can happen
well,
there.
That's true.
We will be back. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we will talk about many things. We'll talk about Syria. We'll talk about Lou Reed. We'll talk about the World Series. We'll talk about cruise ships. Talk about all kinds
big.
Of good stuff. Big, big cruise ships.
Cruise ships.
What?
You're
yeah.
listening to, it's a late edition in the rundown. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Libby Post is here. Ray Graff is here. And Alan Chartok. And we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we would love to hear from you. Just hearing a little bit of music from Lou Reed. And he passed away.
Yes.
And it was announced yesterday of his passing. So we wanted to talk a little bit about his, I guess, his legacy and also.
Alan's pointing at me. Alan's you.
You've been put in charge,
yeah.
Ray.
What do I know?
You are
Why don't you ask Libby? I'm sure Libby listened a lot to Lou Reed back in the day. Go ahead, Libby.
He was great. I mean, you know, honestly, for the kids who were growing up in the 70s, 80s, struggling with sexuality and those kinds of issues, some of his music, you know, Take a Walk on the Wild Side was all about a transgender person, back then called a transvestite, and it was a positive portrayal, even though, you know, not the best things happened to this person. But it said that there are people out there who are actually thinking about this stuff, and it's okay. And it was really, his music was great. And it just, it's new cutting edge stuff. Well, not new anymore, but it was cutting edge and changed rock and roll. And I think for the better.
Ray, would you like to?
No, it's sad. People die, it's sad.
Oh, come on, Ray.
I'm sorry. This is the cycle of life, and I feel bad for him.
So let me ask you,
his family.
I'm going to go quick on this because I don't think it's going to be worth more than that. And that is when you see a headline, and this was fairly omnipresent yesterday, of rock and roll pioneer with his organization, you know, with the Velvet Underground, and originally
Warhol.
Sponsored by Andy Warhol, right?
Yeah.
Their contributions to music and to rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place for me to say what I think about all that, and it's not
this
the time.
This is not the time.
Let's be respectful of those who have passed.
Well, that's right. I mean,
but we are being respectful. We're talking about how wonderful they
well,
are.
Well, I wouldn't be saying that.
See, Ray wouldn't be saying that.
So I'm not going to say that.
No, but it's a very interesting question about whether or not when somebody leaves, let's say Joe McCarthy dies.
Mm. Well, he's not Joe. I mean, he made artistic.
I didn't say he was Joe McCarthy. I'm just trying to make a point here to run out the clock that
well, we have other stuff. We don't have to.
I'm trying to make a point. That you're not supposed to say anything bad about somebody who dies.
Oh.
If it's Joe McCarthy,
I'd have no problem.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So,
but I mean, it's art, and it didn't speak to me. But therefore, I won't say
anything.
Well,
I'll tell you my one impression. I kept hearing these tributes to him, and they were playing his music. Now, the music, as Libby indicates, had a serious message to it.
Some of it.
Nevertheless, what'd you say?
Some of it, not all of it.
No, but some of it, and And what confused me is the stuff I was hearing didn't sound very rock and roll-y. You know, it sounded sort of simplistic.
It's out there. It was out there music.
In terms of content.
And sort of some of the music. I mean, you know, sort of like Steve Miller going out on a Friday night, doing some stuff that we talked about last week, about inhaling. and listening to Lou Reed was very constructive.
I see what you mean.
Yes.
But that's not what I meant when
I
said
this.
I'm
sure you didn't.
No, what I meant was that the you know, when you think about rock and roll, you think about twang, you think about, you know, loud screeching, stuff like that.
Well, I think you stopped listening to rock and roll when Eddie Cochran was at it.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think you stopped listening
well,
to
I'll
rock and roll.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Ray.
And that was good stuff. Don't get me wrong.
You know, you're just wrong, Ray.
Don't get me wrong.
You said when you stopped.
Oh, you never started.
You never started.
That's right.
Go.
There you go.
I always thought it was a corruption of the great folk music of.
Well, of course, that's incorrect, right?
What?
It was a corruption of the great blues music.
Yes.
The black music of the 50s
yeah, that
in
was,
Chicago and,
that
and
was,
elsewhere. And that's it. Wasn't they weren't stealing it from the folkies? They weren't on the they weren't on the back of a railroad car. They were stealing it from the great black musicians in Chicago.
As did many of the folkies. In fact, at Toshi Seeger's memorial service, which Roselle and I attended yesterday in New York at the Ethical Culture Society, there was Lead Belly's granddaughter. So, you know, there is a debt, obviously, from all corners of music to those musicians. You see what I mean, Ray?
And Lou Reed is still dead at the end of this conversation. So let's move on.
Wow.
Wow, I think we hit a sore spot.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Whoa.
Support comes from Capital Wine at State & Lark in the heart of Albany, offering local and international wines, tastings Friday, 6 to 9, capitalwinestore.com. UMass Amherst Museum of Contemporary Art presents the exhibition Du Bois in Our Time. 10 artists explore the legacy of W.E.B. Du Bois 50 years after his death. umass.edu/umca. And Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology surgery and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery. VESHDeerfield.com.
Standing on the corner, suitcase in my hand, Jackson's corset, Jane is in her vest, and me, I'm in a rock and roll band.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. I'm Joe Donahue, Ray Graff is here, Libby Post, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Interesting article in the business section of the New York Times regarding cruise ships. Of course, we went through a period in, I would say, the last 2 or 3 years where the cruise ship industry took a real hit as far as negative publicity. And there were a series of disasters, accidents, unfortunate things that occurred, illness that happened within the cruise ship industry, and but this article really is taking a look at the safety issues and saying that they simply have gotten too big in the eyes of some safety experts. They make the point that one of the largest cruise ships in 1985 was a 46,000 ton Carnival Holiday ship. Now, that was 46,000 tons.
Yeah.
Now, the two record holders are 225,000 ton ships. That is insane.
It's a big
That's
ship.
That's a very, very insane. Big ship. So the Cruise Lines International Association said that last year its North American cruise line members carried about 17 million passengers, up from 7 million in 2000, which makes sense. If you have bigger ships, you can get more people. But the expansion in ship size is worrying safety experts, lawmakers, and regulators who are pushing for more accountability, saying the supersize craze is fraught with potential peril for passengers and crew. Cruise ships operate in a void from the standpoint of oversight and enforcement, according to James Hall, a safety management consultant and chairman of the National Transportation and Safety Board between 1994 and 2001. The industry has been very fortunate until now. The perils were most visible last year, of course, with the Costa Concordia, owned by the Carnival Corporation, which is based in Miami. It capsized off the coast of Italy. The accident killed 32 people and revealed fatal lapses in safety and emergency procedures. In February, we heard about the Carnival Triumph. A fire crippled the ship, stranding thousands without power for 4 days in the Gulf of Mexico until the ship was towed to shore. Another blaze forced Royal Caribbean's Grandeur of the Seas to port in the Bahamas in May, and pictures showed the stern of the ship blackened by flames and smoke. So although most have not resulted in any casualties, the string of accidents and fires has heightened concerns about the ability of these mega ships to handle emergencies or large-scale evacuations. There has been legislation that's been introduced by John Rockefeller of West Virginia that would strengthen federal oversight of cruise lines and safety. And, you know, what's too big?
Well, I don't understand how the size of the ship affected the death or distress in any of those cases. That could happen with a smaller ship as well. I don't understand the connection.
I think it's because of the power, and because there is so much stuff on the ship, there are so many bells and whistles. They're concerned about to make up that room to allow for more passengers, to allow for more stuff on the ship, that safety is being compromised. Okay.
Well, apparently it is, and it has been. They haven't been having the requisite drills.
Right.
In some cases, the crew doesn't always know what to do in an emergency, and there have been deaths on these things. And then, of course, there's all this sort of corruption of the health systems on one of these things, where people start to, you know, get stomach viruses and flus and stuff. My issue with the cruise industry, and I'm sure I'm going to get myself into a lot of trouble here, is why in the world would anybody take one? You know, I mean, it's, to me, it's just...
There goes that underwriter.
Sort of...
Finish your
it's
thought.
Sort of, you know, why would you do that?
Always wanted to go on one.
Really?
Because I like being on the water, but in these kinds of ships, I think if we were to do one now, I'd go on a smaller ship, like a sailboat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of thing. A big sailboat. You know, those kind of, no, not the SS Minnow.
3-hour tour.
No 3-hour tour. But, you know, you can go
Circle Line.
50, 60
Weather
people who are on the ship, and, you know, it's a cruise on a large schooner kind of thing. But these things, they don't even know you're on the water anymore. Because of the way they move, it's like a big city.
I think you have to be a good schmoozer to
do
it well.
Yeah, you do have to be a
you know,
very
you
good
go
schmoozer.
You go in and you tell everybody why you're important. They tell you why you're there important.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to dress. I mean, and that's the biggest thing for me.
When were you last on a cruise?
I never went, but I heard all about it.
I keep hearing all of it. Yeah. My mother kept threatening to take us on one.
Have you ever been on an island like St. Martin or one of those places?
Yeah.
When the ship comes in?
Yeah.
And then people get off and they just sort of come out. And it's appropriate behavior because it's like Halloween now.
It's like zombies.
Know? Yeah, exactly. Right. And they're just looking, and you're looking at them, and they look at, and then they're nice people. They are nice people, you know.
They don't know where they are necessarily.
They come from exotic places like Iowa. Places like that, and then they just sort of.
Well, I have to tell you, in the gay travel industry, cruises are very, very big.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yes.
Do you know why?
Yes, because you have thousands of like-minded same-sex people in one square footage for 5 or 6 days, and everyone's having one big party.
And now, what's the difference between that and heterosexual people all on the same big?
We dance better.
All also.
And the music's really much better.
This is very interesting to me.
You should do this.
I am a denizen of gay culture, though. I do know what goes on.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm not questioning, but I'm saying you should. I think you should.
I do. Lynn says no. She doesn't want to go.
Oh, okay.
So you know how it is, right? Sorry, honey, but, you know, she's not interested, and so we do other things. But...
You said it's one big party.
I mean, this.
I wondered if we could have a lesson in nomenclature.
But first
it's
of all,
it's one big party.
But party means sex? Is that what it means?
I don't know.
What the heck?
It means having a really, really good time.
What do you think goes on in these ships?
Right, even in straight people have sex when they're on a cruise. You know, it's one of those things.
First
so maybe,
of all,
you know,
most
time
of the,
to go.
A lot of families, a tremendous amount of families on the boats, as evidenced
yes.
by the, as evidenced by the...
The commercials.
Well, no, but the, Disney Cruise Lines.
Yes,
and,
Disney's
and
a
the,
lot of fun, from what I understand. I
and
have friends
the,
that do that.
And the large pools yeah. and all of the, yeah. you know, the water parks and all the stuff, mm-hmm. the miniature golf courses. And, I mean, they certainly cater to
yep.
children.
Yep.
The dress thing has been gone for
oh,
a long
okay,
time.
Okay, that's really good.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
sense.
They'll have...
Wait. Have you ever been on one?
I have been on one.
And, well, then you're, unlike the rest of us, you can actually sort of clue us in as to what's what.
I think he's trying.
What's what? What do you mean, what's what? I think if the issue...
What do you like about them?
If you're making a social issue and you are making a cultural issue and you are making a societal caste system issue...
Observation. it's all according to how
I'm not comfortable with that.
But
however,
the
if
is,
we get back to the
classes,
you
wait.
Ship.
This is very interesting. Are the classes allowed to mingle with each other?
Yes,
of course.
So if you're in like third class, you could go up to the first class
yeah.
deck.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not like it used to be.
It's not like
it's when your grandparents came
not
over
like
on the boat.
Most of the
not like the
Titanic.
That's right. And you know why? Because they put them down below. The rich refused to associate with the poor,
mm-hmm.
so they put them down below where they'd be the first to go.
It's probably absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
I think that I think for a lot of people, for I know my experience with cruising has been through various. It's sort of much like you said. A lot of times, people have conferences. They'll do different mm-hmm. things. They'll have whatever, and you go on these things. And I've been on a couple. I've been on some that I've really enjoyed. I've had some where I've hated them. So I have a very love-hate relationship with the whole thing.
Now, the ones you hated, why did you hate them?
One, I got horribly ill.
That'll do it.
I did get the norovirus virus, and that was horrible.
Yeah, that's bad.
And that was horrid. The other thing is the one thing I will disagree with you on, Libby, is that the larger that they are, they're still
boats.
They're still boats on the water,
mm-hmm.
and they can flop around as big as they are.
Yeah, I guess so.
And because they're so big, they're unable to go into many ports now. And they're unable to go into many ports that sometimes they are able to go into if there are any kind of weather issues, which means mm-hmm. that then you are just
You're
sitting
really...
out in the ocean for 5 days.
Yeah, that's great.
And that sucks.
That does suck.
So, because there is, you know, there's little to do other than...
Shuffleboard.
Yeah, that's right.
Lots and lots of shuffleboard, checkers.
The crab table stays open. Later,
yeah, I'm
right?
sure
that's,
it
that's
does.
A good thing about it, but good
sure it
good
does.
Odds on the cruise in the
yeah,
in the cruise casino.
Yeah, no
question. But the issue here about of safety, I think, is a really interesting one, and also to your point earlier, Ray. I mean, it's a lot easier to get 2,000 people off a boat than it is, mm-hmm. or 1,000 people than it is to get
yeah.
you know 8,000 people off.
I'm not making any excuses on the safety issues, but you know, there are a handful of disasters or situations where things go wrong, yet there are thousands of ships that go out and thousands of cruises and millions
just
of
like
people
airplanes.
Who do it. Right, that's the point. You know, a plane goes down, that doesn't stop us from using airplanes. I can go walk across the street, get my car, and get hit by a bus, you know. So it doesn't stop us. There needs to be standards. There needs to be safety standards. And the companies, I mean, most of this is Carnival. You know,
yeah.
occasionally it's the Royal Caribbean, but most of it's Carnival, and they really need to take a look at their standards, their staffing, their training and making sure that the quality of the experience is better for people. Otherwise, I wouldn't go on a Carnival cruise. I'd go on Royal Caribbean or one of those other ones, but
Holland,
I wouldn't
America
go.
Or Disney,
yeah,
or
I'd definitely go on
Norwegian
Disney in a heartbeat.
I'd
go on Disney. But you know, I think it's Carnival really needs to take a look at what they're doing, because they're the ones who've had the most issues.
And they're also the largest company mm-hmm. that is absorbing a lot of
the
smaller wines.
Ones, right.
It used to be the case, so it's become mm-hmm. a big industry.
Yeah. We were approached once by one of them, I forget which one, at WAMC to get all the WAMCers to go on a cruise together. I knew that wouldn't work.
Yeah, right, just because you all wouldn't want to be in the same place together
No, I knew it wouldn't work because our people are discerning and the rest of it, but they seemed to think it would work, and they offered a bunch of us, you know, free rides, if we could do that. And, you know, I mean, I would assume if they did something literary that they would offer Joe a chance to come in, because he, you know, he's so good at it, and be the head interlocutor.
Well, Olivia Cruz, which is the lesbian cruise, they don't have their own ships, but
too.
They do their, yeah. The Olivia Cruz does, Olivia Travel does lesbian cruises.
Who was she?
Olivia? Oh, that's a long time. Oh, Cruz? I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, they used to do political cruises where, you know, you would go and there'd be political conversations and blah, blah, blah. And those lasted for about 5 minutes. Yeah. Nobody wanted to do those anymore.
Sure.
And they all just wanted to go and have a good time and party.
They have a great, a Playbill has a Broadway one. And it's a bunch of like Broadway stars and Lewis Black. And I was just thinking, being on a boat with Lewis Black for 5 days, what would that be like, for God's sake?
And I know that the Channel 58 around here, you know, the old movie channel.
Turner Classic.
Oh, Turner Classics.
They have them.
Wow. That would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun. That
all right.
And Disney.
All right. Do we need a break? Or where are we? We're good, right? We took the break? Well, it seems so long ago. Let us talk about how did I lose track?
Yeah, it's easy.
Let us talk about the World Series call that stopped the world for an hour or so. This was the an obstruction was obstruction the right call to make on the wild last play of Game 3. And this is of the World Series that took place on Saturday night, and it was a wild game. And, you know, I think this is probably a hard thing for us to discuss, for Libby and I, because we're Sox fans. We wanted to see them win, and it just seemed weird. However, it seems in reading all that I have read and looking at the tape and understanding the rule –
what is the rule?
And
can't get in the way of the base runner.
It's the act of a fielder who, while not in possession of the ball and not in the act of fielding the ball, impedes the progress of any runner. Well, the guy fell down and he was trying to get up. And he fell down because he was fielding a ball and he was in
robbed.
Front of the runner.
We
so, I mean,
robbed.
Give me a break.
And another question. Joe, you
I'm
said
sorry,
you're
Joe.
A Sox fan, but you're not a Sox fan. You're a Phillies fan.
I am a Phillies fan.
So what is this sort of like, you know, when the Phillies are out of the way, then the next one up could be something. So
I think it's an American League team and a National League team, and I grew up with the Phillies, and I have a lifelong love of the Phillies, but I enjoy the Red Sox, and I find myself rooting for them as I do the Patriots all the time.
In this temporary situation.
I'm a Mets fan, and Ray and I have had these conversations, and he will kill me for this, but if the you know, after the first 2 weeks, we know it's not going to happen with the Mets.
Ray, so, of course, knew before the first day.
I know.
I told Ray, I said to Ray, they won. They've won 3 games or something like that now. So
yeah, forget it. Yeah.
You know, I do have to say on a completely separate note, there is a great, did you see the great commercial with the Philly Fanatic and Mr. Met?
No.
There's a fantastic commercial where basically they're talking about how different sides can get together and get something done. It's sort of a feel-good commercial, but they have the Philly Fanatic, the mascot of the Philadelphia Phillies, and Mr. Met, and neither one of them can talk. So it's just really funny, and it's a hilarious commercial and very, very well done.
It's
quite enjoyable. Ray, your thoughts on the call?
I think, you know.
A rule's a rule?
A rule's a rule. It's a shame that it has to decide a World Series game. It's the rule. It's just the rule. What, Libby? Why is that wrong?
It's the first time it's ever been used.
That's not true. It happens every season. It happens every season many times.
And if you hadn't called the call,
then you'd have a real problem.
Then you'd have a real rhubarb.
All right, fine. I just, fine. I mean,
come on, you're a Mets fan. You should be an agnostic on this World Series.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that.
I believe in God, and I'm the true Red Sox fan. Here.
I know you are.
Oh yeah,
I know you are. And we have very
actually,
close friends who are really dying.
To be honest with you, he woke up. Now he calls Gustina early. You know, Gustina's here for Morning Edition, and 4:45 the phone rings. Gustina picks it up. Hello. What happened with the Sox game last night?
I did.
That's Alan. Yeah.
Oh,
which shocked the heck out of me.
I got to sleep at 7:30.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I was surprised.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Libby, Ray, Alan, thank you very much.
We'll, obstructionists all.
Yes, obstructionists all.
That's it.
It seems to be the word of the day. One big obstruction. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.